sporty greetings and happy December to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Basically, I'm setting up phase two of my life. I call it phase two because I can't play this game forever at a competitive high level. Would I love to? Yes. Guys have played into their 70s and 80s, but they're not competing at a world-class level. You know, Arnold played, Gary still plays, but they're not playing a full schedule. They're not playing, you know, 20-plus events, and they're not playing that ranked in the top 10 in the world. But you can still play golf for a lifetime, and I want to play golf for a lifetime, but also I know I can't compete out here for a lifetime.
That's Tiger Woods, who after a 15-month layoff is teeing off Thursday at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. The 40-year-old Woods is the official host of the tournament, which benefits his foundation. Tiger hasn't played on the PGA Tour since August 2015, having undergone surgeries in September and again in October last year because of back problems. Woods planned to return at last month's Safeway Open, a PGA Tour event in California, but Tiger withdrew 3 days before the opening round, saying his game was not sharp enough. Tiger says he's now in better shape and looking forward to the competition in Nassau.
I'm going to give it my best. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to try and do what I can do and put the ball in the correct spots, give myself looks, and try and bury these putts and post scores and get myself in that mix come Sunday afternoon. I know that's a tall order cause since I've been away from the game for so long and I've made a lot of different changes in my game, but the mindset's still the same. And whether that physically and also equipment, practice schedules, training, all that has evolved, the mindset of competing hasn't. And that is to go out there and try and beat these guys. I know they're going to try and beat me.
Tiger Woods will be trying to beat 17 other top professional golfers, including defending champion Bubba Watson, the two-time Masters winner from the United States. The Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas does not include a Friday cut, so golfing hero Tiger Woods will guaranteed to be in action over all 4 days. Cameroon will host neighbor and defending champion Nigeria in Saturday's final at the Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament. In semifinal results, Cameroon edged Ghana 1-0 in the capital, Yaounde, on a goal by Raissa Fugio in the 72nd minute. And the Nigerian women stayed on course for another trophy with a 1-0 victory over South Africa in Limbe. Desire Oparanozie scored off a powerful free kick in the 54th minute for the Super Falcons of Nigeria, who are bidding for their record-extending 10th African title. The indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon, meanwhile, are hoping the fourth time will be the charm. Three previous times, they've reached the final and lost. Roland Akong is the news coordinator of Equinox Radio and Television in Yaounde. My VOA colleague James Buddy asked Roland about the mood in the capital following Cameroon's semifinal victory.
A lot of excitement, a lot of happiness, a lot of joy. People are really, really moved. Thousands of spectators were in the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaounde to watch the encounter. And they cheered the girls up to victory, and they left the stadium very, very satisfied that the girls had qualified to play the finals of the Women African Cup of Nations that is taking place in Yaoundé.
So, Roland, how do you think the Lionesses pull up this victory over one of Africa's powerhouses, meaning Ghana?
It was not an easy victory, I must admit, because the match during the first half was very, very tight in the sense that the Lions were dominating over the Ghanaian side simply because the Ghanaians were playing very, very defensive while the Lions were kept on attacking. But in the second half, the Ghanaians changed their tactics. They now went to play on the offensive. It was only during the 72nd minute of the encounter that the magical player of the Lionesses of Cameroon, who is called Abudi Ongene, I think I got the name right, Abudi Ongene, she is now called the magical player of the Lionesses of Cameroon. At the 72nd minute, she gave a cross, and after a hard fight in the 18-meter box of the Black Queens of Ghana, Raisa Feju came from nowhere and hit the ball into the net. For Cameroon now, we'll have 1 and Ghana 0, picking the ticket for the finals of the encounter.
So now Cameroon is going to go against another powerhouse in African soccer, meaning the Falcons of Nigeria. How did Nigeria get there?
Nigeria beat South Africa 1-0 to obtain that victory. Many people consider South Africa to be one of the weak teams of the competition. And so they thought that Nigeria was going to beat them at least more than 1, 2, 3, or 4 goals to zero, but it wasn't the case. 1 goal to zero, showing that it was not an easy match for the Falcons of Nigeria.
So give me your soccer magic hat and tell me, who do you think is going to be crowned the new champion, the Lionesses of Cameroon or the Falcons of Nigeria?
As a Cameroonian, I would say the Lionesses of Cameroon are going to win the Falcons of Nigeria. I'm saying so because the girls are determined. They are very, very determined. Their determination and their courage, their fighting spirit is also coming from the fact that each player is going to take home the sum of 25 million francs CFA. It's a huge sum of money. I'm sure this is one of the factors that is really pushing the girls to fight very hard to win the cup at all costs. Secondly, the girls want to revive football in Cameroon. Football has been down. Many people believe that the men football squad has disappointed the country, and they see the girls giving a lot of hope to football again in Cameroon. And the girls want to show that what the men have not been able to do, the women have been able to do it. So we see a kind of the philosophy of feminism rising in Cameroon through women's football. So the girls are determined to win. The nation entirely is behind them, giving them its full support for the girls to lift the trophy. We know it's not going to be an easy encounter because the Nigerians too are champions of women's football in Africa, a title which they have been keeping for many years. They are also prepared to lift the cup, to lift the trophy come Sunday. I must tell you that when the Falcons are playing, many people see the girls like men playing football. And so some Cameroonians are asking whether our Lionesses will be able to face the Falcons, who are playing more like men than women. So it's going to be a David versus Goliath. And I see David beating Goliath. The Liga Goliath, of course.
As I was saying that, Roland, I am a soccer or football fanatic. And lately, particularly this week, I've been almost having sleepless nights watching the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup in Papua New Guinea. Do you think that African women will begin to play on the big stage, one day bringing the World Cup championship to Africa?
I think one day it's going to happen not far from now. When you look at most of the players who are playing the African Women Cup of Nations in Cameroon, most of the players are already playing international. It goes to show that the competition is moving from the local level now to the international level. And playing at the international level means that they are gaining a lot of experience, which they are possibly going to transfer back to their various team when they come to play back home in their various team. We look at also the infrastructure. Sport infrastructures are developing a lot in Africa. Cameroon, for example, took time to renovate and even construct some new stadiums for the matches to take place. So I see that with sport infrastructure developing and the players moving out to compete in other countries or playing in other countries, there's a possibility for the continent shining on the international level as far as the women's soccer is concerned. Don't forget that this Cameroon that is playing today, Nigeria, Cameroon, South Africa, and Ghana, for example, they have always been competing in international women's soccer championships in other countries.
That's Roland Akong, the news coordinator of Equinox Radio and Television in Yaoundé, Cameroon. And Roland was talking with my VOA colleague, James Buddy, the host of our Daybreak Africa radio program. Roland talked about Nigeria, Cameroon, South Africa, and Ghana, the four semifinalists competing in international women's soccer championships. Cameroon and Nigeria both qualified for last year's Women's World Cup in Canada. Cameroon reached the round of 16 before losing to China 1-0, while Nigeria did not get out of the group stage, losing to Australia and the USA and drawing 3-3 with Sweden. The United States beat Japan 5-2 in the final to win its third Women's World Cup trophy. But let's get back to the Africa Women's Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon and take a look at the leading goal scorers. Asisat Ashola of Nigeria, the 2014 African Women's Footballer of the Year, is the clear front-runner to win the Golden Boot in Cameroon. She has 6 goals. 4 of them came in Nigeria's first match, a 6-0 mauling of Mali. Elizabeth Addo of Ghana has 3 goals, and Elizabeth could theoretically score a few more on Friday when Ghana goes against South Africa in the third-place match in Yaoundé. There are 4 players who have 2 goals, and 2 of them, Cameroon's Henrietta Akaba and Nigeria's Desire Oparanozie, will be in action in Saturday's final. Ghana's Samira Suleiman and Mali's Basira Touré also have 2 goals in the tournament. Yes, they've all gotten in their kicks. And on that note, kick it, Nick!
Kick it!
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In Major League Soccer news, Toronto FC will host the Seattle Sounders December 10th in Canada in the MLS Cup Championship game. Toronto advanced to the final Wednesday night with a 5-2 victory in extra time over another Canada-based club, the Montreal Impact. On a rainy night in Toronto, French midfielder Benoit Cheroux and Canadian Toussaint Ricketts scored 2 minutes apart in extra time to lead Toronto to victory. Toronto won the 2-match series on aggregate, 7-5. The Seattle Sounders, meanwhile, advanced to the MLS Cup final 4 days ago, when they beat the Colorado Rapids 1-0 in Colorado on a goal by American Jordan Morris in the 56th minute. The Sounders won that series on aggregate 3-1. But let's get back to Jordan Morris. He's in his first season with the Sounders, And the 22-year-old has scored 14 goals in all competitions, and he also won the MLS Rookie of the Year Award. Jordan Morris, one of the top young American soccer players. And speaking of goals, let's give a Sunnyside of Sports salute to Enzo Zidane, the 21-year-old son of French great Zinedine Zidane. Enzo Zidane made his father proud Wednesday when he scored a goal in his competitive debut for Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey. Zinedine Zidane, Real Madrid's coach, gave his son a chance, and Enzo took full advantage, finding the net with a nice right-footed shot from the edge of the area to help Madrid rout the third division club, Cultural Leonesa, 6-1. With that victory, Madrid advanced to the round of 16 in the Copa del Rey. Speaking after the match, Enzo Zidane said, and I quote, "It's a dream to debut with Real Madrid and score a goal, and I'm happy that it happened at home and with a victory." The fans at Santiago Bernabéu Stadium loudly chanted Enzo's name after his goal. Enzo says the game jersey will go to his father for all his support through the years. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Happy Thursday. Happy December, Andrew.
I know. It doesn't feel like December outside here in Washington, D.C. It's very warm yesterday and today. Not December weather at all.
And getting back to that younger Zidane, Andrew, I got to believe Zinedine Zidane must be very proud right now.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. We saw, you know, as we were talking about with Nico Rosberg last week, how his father was very proud of him and having a racing career of his own. I'm sure that Zidane is proud of his son as well.
And speaking of being proud, I know you're proud of one of your former mentors here at the VOA. Kind of a somber ceremony, but also some closure yesterday. We didn't have you on the program. I want you to tell our VOA listeners about that.
Yeah, so one of our colleagues here at the Voice of America, Robert Long, Bob Long, passed away back in August. And he was interred yesterday at Arlington National Cemetery here just outside of D.C. It was a very nice ceremony. He had served in the U.S. Marine Corps, served in the Vietnam War. So he was placed there. His ashes were placed there at Arlington National Cemetery. And it was it was a beautiful ceremony, and we had a lot of great stories about Bob that we told throughout the ceremony. But as I was looking to prepare for the show today, I realized very fittingly, this week as of yesterday is Jimmy V week here in the U.S. Now, yesterday we had Bob's service. Bob passed away of cancer. Jimmy Valvano was a college basketball coach here in the U.S. who died of cancer 23 years ago and is still remembered to this day. He gave a very emotional speech at the ESPN ESPY Awards in 1993, just about 8 weeks before he died, where he told people to laugh, think, have your emotions move to tears, and try to do that every day. So you have a heck of a day if you can do those three things. And in the years since he's passed, the Jimmy V Foundation has become a cancer research organization, providing funding for cancer research. And it's very much linked with college basketball, because he was such a successful coach, led North Carolina State to the national title in 1983. And so you see a lot of college coaches and players, some coaches who are still active who coached alongside him, remembering him and honoring him this week with this Jimmy V week. And in fact, you see a lot of those clips of his speech that he gave at that ESPY Awards 23 years later on social media. You see people highlighting those speech moments still to this day. So still having more than two decades later, some great power and inspiring a lot of people.
And for fans who follow U.S. college basketball, I'm sure they remember, Andrew, that was one of the great finishes. North Carolina State winning on a last second shot. And Jimmy Valvano running all over the court looking for
jumping up in the air,
looking for someone to hug, I think.
It was you jumping up in the air. It is one of the famous shots in American sports, that video of him just running onto the court and so exuberant. So as I said, as Bob passed away from cancer, this is a week of honoring cancer victims, survivors, and devoting energy and attention to the research.
What else is trending in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, I mentioned that it was unseasonably warm yesterday and today here in Washington, D.C. It was about 20 degrees Celsius yesterday, maybe about 15 degrees Celsius today. And that caused a bit of a problem up not too far north of us in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where the Sacramento Kings were supposed to be playing the Philadelphia 76ers in the National Basketball Association. However, due to the unseasonable temperatures and the humidity, the floor had all this condensation on it and became very slippery. So you had players even taking a mop. DeMarcus Cousins, the Kings all-star, doing mop, double mop duty. He had two mops, and you see these videos online of him kind of trying to mop the court.
Mopping things up.
It was all, you know, futile. However, they had to cancel that game. Now, apparently, and they were going to reschedule it later in the season. Now, apparently, this has happened once before there in Philadelphia, that they had the floor, had the condensation on it. And part of the reason why, they said, is because of the ice underneath. Now, up in Philadelphia, as they do in many cities, including here in Washington, D.C., they use their sports arena as for basketball and for hockey. And I've seen an impressive video online. What they actually do is they take, on top of the hockey rink, they put these kind of mats down, and then on top of that put the hardwood for the basketball court, so they can actually convert it, and the ice stays underneath. So they said that was part of the problem, that the ice underneath, the water with the condensation, I guess the temperature difference, and the air conditioning wasn't on high enough in the arena, so that's why you had the condensation there.
So the game was postponed due to condensation.
Yes. So so you had the Sacramento Kings tweeting out, they said, tonight's game has been postponed. Y'all can't trust the process, but not the floor. SMH Sixers. SMH being shaking my head. And then Sixers star Joel Embiid, of course, University of Kansas player, said, well, the court was tanking tonight. So the court didn't do its duty in the game there.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, big news out of Major League Baseball, a big change to how the World Series home field advantage is determined. Now, from 2003 through this year, the home field advantage for the World Series, which stadium, which team they would have more games out of those best of seven series, was determined by the All-Star Game. And this actually happened in 2002. The All-Star Game finished in a tie, 7-7. And Bud Selig, who was the commissioner of Major League Baseball at the time from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the game was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he was actually booed by his hometown fans because they ran out of pitchers. They couldn't play anymore because they ran out of players to pitch, so they had to finish in a tie. So after that, Major League Baseball decided, let's make this more interesting. Let's make this really count. Whoever wins between the National League and American League, that All-Star game, that is the team that's going to have home field advantage. Well, they've just decided to do away with that after 13 years. And starting next year, the home field advantage will be determined by the team, either the American League pennant-winning team or the National League pennant-winning team, that has the best record.
Okay.
So the reaction to this from fans is pretty universally positive. A lot of people saying this was a stupid rule, stupid idea to let the All-Star game kind of determine who's going to have home field advantage, especially if you're a National League fan. I think the American League has won something like 12 of the last 13 or 10 of the last 12 years. So they've had a lot of home field advantage. This actually puts more of the determination on the record and the play of the team. So that is sitting positive with a lot of folks. But the issue now becomes the All-Star game, they say, won't matter. How many people are going to watch the All-Star game if you're not having that home field advantage, something to play for? So that's going to be interesting to see if it remains popular.
And if we looked at the records this past season, Andrew, the Chicago Cubs, the World Series champions, they would have had home field advantage. I think they had the best record in baseball, 103 wins during the regular season. So I guess it was justified that they went on to win their first world title since 1908, something like that.
Yeah, so it worked out for them anyway. There you go.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew, and we'll see you again on Friday.
All righty, sounds good.
And that wraps up the December 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Happy December. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer kicking it, Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This month, U.S. Ambassador to Malawi, Virginia Palmer, announced a new United States donation of $23 million to assist the Malawian people in need of humanitarian food assistance. This additional donation is in response to the Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee's report that 6.5 million Malawians need humanitarian food assistance to alleviate suffering through March 2017. All of these funds will be channeled through the United Nations World Food Program. Of the $23 million, $18 million will be used to help fill deficits in pulses and super cereals needed for the 2016-2017 Food Insecurity Response Plan, while $5 million will be used to purchase ready-to-use therapeutic food for HIV patients currently being treated with antiretroviral therapy, or ART. The latter is particularly important to preserve gains made to date in HIV treatment, as malnourished patients tend to discontinue ART without access to food to ameliorate the treatment's side effects. To further preserve development gains in other sectors, the United States government has also reprogrammed $12 million of previously planned investments in agricultural development and climate change adaptation programs. These were longer-term investments that now have been redirected to enhance the United States' responsiveness to the dire food security situation Malawi currently faces. They are primarily food for work activities, whereby beneficiaries will receive food for their contributions to resilience-building measures, such as afforestation, soil and water conservation, and small-scale irrigation. The additional assistance made available to Malawi brings the United States' total contribution to the 2016-2017 Food Insecurity Response Plan to nearly $118 million, equivalent to about 30% of the plan's $395 million estimated cost. Ambassador Palmer added that the United States will continue to work with the government of Malawi to break the cycle of food insecurity. The United States government continues to stand by Malawians in their time of need. But together, said Ambassador Palmer, we recognize that policy and market predictability are critical if Malawi's farmers are to become entrepreneurs, if agribusinesses are to invest, and if Malawi is to transform its agriculture sector from a source of vulnerability to an engine for growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Fidel Castro ruled Cuba for 47 years, leaving an imprint on almost every major revolutionary effort in Africa after 1959. Join us for an in-depth look at Castro's impact on Africa. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.